Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Comedy Concepts with your host, Nancy Lombardo.
Welcome to the show. All right. I don't know how to begin today off. I want warm weather again. That's what I want. I want a beach. I want something. Anyway, had a great weekend performing. Thanks to you, the 13th Street. Come here to Phoenix every Thursday and Wednesday, 6:30. It's an open mic. Very fun mics. Thank you, Tom Newell, Jillian Cohen, Lisa Harmon. Everybody does a great job. And what are we going to do about this weather, though, huh? What? I don't know. Got to blame somebody.
I was at a dance when he caught my eye, standing all alone, looking sad and shy. We began to dance, swaying to and fro, and then I knew I'd never let him go. Blame it on the bossa nova with its magic spell. Blame it on the bossa nova that he did so well.
Was it the moon?
No, the bossa nova. No, it was the what was the dance?
La Bossa Nova.
We took a chance on
La Bossa Nova.
I knew that he was a wonderful lover the minute that he did
La Bossa Nova.
Yum, yum, yum.
La Bossa Nova.
You three came from La Bossa Nova.
Blame it on the bossa nova. Oh, the Oscars are over. Oh, good. I'm so glad. I'll tell you, be honest with you, I can't watch them. They're just too long. They go on forever. And, you know, I watch the realities. I watch the highlights the next day. But speaking of the Oscars, Betty Jo Tucker, tomorrow Movie Addict Headquarters, will be featuring a Oscar-type person. Guess who came to dinner? Catherine Houghton from the groundbreaking film Guess Who's Coming to Dinner and film critic Mac Bates share their picks for the best movies about the African-American experience. And Guess Who's Coming to Dinner received 11 Oscar nominations and won two. Best Picture, Best Actress. Oh, you can't go wrong with Sidney Poitier. I love him. I love him. That's Movie Attic Headquarters every Tuesday at 4 p.m. All righty. Let's keep it moving, shall we? I don't know what the mood is. I usually let my picks go there, but it was the 40th anniversary of Saturday Night Live. So let's hear a little from Alan Zweibel, the history of Alan Zweibel. He's one of the main writers. As you know, he was very good friends with Gilda Radner.
I wanted to be a comedy writer. I always did ever since I was a little boy growing up on Long Island. But I was in college, and there was no courses. There was no curriculum. There was no way. There was no road to take to become a comedy writer. So I figured, gee, maybe I'll become a lawyer, have something to fall back on. And my grades were okay, but they made me take this test, the law boards, the LSATs. Are you familiar with this test? Which was, they're graded from 200 to 800. If you can write your name, you get a 200. If you're Albert Einstein, you get an 800. If you're me, I got a 390, which reclassified me as a mineral, right away. And I got a 390. I went home to Long Island, told my Jewish parents that I got a 390 on the law boards. And about a week later, this is after they uncovered the mirrors, and and got up from those wooden boxes that they had brought in. My father handed me $1,000, which I then handed to a guy named Stanley Kaplan. You know this guy? He's all over. He's got these schools where they teach you how to prepare to take standardized tests, and for 6 months, $1,000, 6 months, I'm there with the earphones on and the number two pencils and taking the old test and just really focusing on retaking the law boards, which I did 6 months later, where my score catapulted up to a 401. So I figured at that rate, I'd be 90 and my father would be broke by the time I got into an English-speaking law school. So I started writing jokes for Catskill comedians, old comedians who were working the Borscht Belt, the Jewish Alps, called the Catskill Mountains. The Catskill Mountains in the 50s and the 60s were the spawning ground for comedians. I wrote for every Morty, Dickie, Freddie, and Lee that ever lived, okay? I'm 21, they're 50 years old, and they're paying me $7 a joke. That was the rate that I got. $7 a joke. And some of them were just real pains in the ass about it because they'd only pay me if the joke got a laugh. Yeah. So what I would do is I would get in my parents' car on a Friday or Saturday night, drive from Long Island up to the Catskill Mountains, to the Concord Hotel, to the Neverly, Grossingers, wherever it was. I'd sit in the back of the room and I'd listen to my jokes being told. And then one of the comedian would come off the stage and he'd come up to me and he goes, boy, you know, that joke about paving the driveway really didn't get a laugh. And I'd say, gee, I heard a laugh. And then we would bargain, and I'd go home with $4, you know. So, you know, I was 21, they're 50. You know, it was like writing for my parents' friends. And I was different sensibilities, and I really didn't want to write for them, but these were the only people that I knew. And I looked around and go, no, I got to change something here. I got to change. And what I did was, there were two clubs in New York at the time. This is in the mid-70s now. It's a Catch a Rising Star and the Improvisation. There were two showcases where the newer breed of comedians at the time were coming through. So what I did was I took all the jokes that these older guys wouldn't buy from me, and I made it up into a stand-up comedy act for myself. And I went to the club, and my plan was to go on stage, deliver the jokes, with the hopes that a manager, an agent, a TV executive, all of whom were hanging out at these clubs now, would like the material and give me a job. The first week that I'm there, I met a guy who was also starting out. His name is Billy Crystal. And he was starting, and we became fast friends. I lived in Woodmere, Long Island with my parents, and he lived in Long Beach, Long Island with his wife and kid. He's more mature than I am, okay? And every night he would take his little blue Volkswagen and pick me up at my parents. By the way, in case it ever comes up in conversation, this is the international symbol for little blue Volkswagen, okay? He would pick me up at my parents' house. We'd go into the city, tell our jokes, and then he would take me home. About 4 months into this experiment, I'm on stage about 1 o'clock in the morning, having the hardest time in the world making these six drunks from Des Moines laugh. I get off the stage and I'm really upset. It was horrible. I go over to the bar and I'm hanging my head and waiting for Billy to get done so I can get a ride home. When a guy comes and he sits down next to me and just starts staring at me and staring at me. And finally I go, what? He goes, you know, you're the worst comedian I've ever seen in my life. I said, I know. Why rub this in like this? What are you doing? He said, well, your material's not bad. Did you write it? I said, yeah. He said, can I see more of it? I said, you bet. I didn't even ask who it was at first because I would have shown it to like a gardener at this point, okay? Ends up, this guy is Lorne Michaels.
Dear handsy drunk dude, you're kinda being inappropriate right now. What happened to you being a flamboyant gay man who doesn't like vagina at all? You touching me a lot kind of makes me feel really uncomfortable. And I think I don't like it. Nope. Honestly, if you weren't gay, I'd probably have freaked out a lot sooner. But I thought you were just being fun. And now it's not fun. I don't like being touched so much. Like this. Ooh, you're drunk. You are so drunk right now. Yeah, you are in my bubble. And I don't like it. And this bubble is only intended for men that I approve of, that are like, you know, like near my age and prefer girls. Cause that would make sense. That would just make sense. There's really no other way. Why? That's just how it works with sexual orientation. Right? You seem to be having a blast, but maybe you could do that outside of my personal bubble, yeah? In your own bubble of happiness, okay? So you're not invited in this bubble. Sorry. Why don't you go and find some people who like being touched like this? Oh, look! Barbara Streisand, drag queen! Isn't that interesting? That's way more interesting than me. You should go over there. Love, Camille. Yeah, these are letters. Oh, these are letters to people. They wrote me up that one time, and so I wrote it down. Yeah, these are letters.
record, I see it as a movie. And this is the second to last scene. And it's called Goodbye, New York. The first song is called Leavin', and that's the end of the movie at the beginning. You know how they cut movies like that? It's a flash forward. So, anyhow, when you're listening to it, maybe you'll get that. Let's hope you do. All right. So this song is called Goodbye, New York. Bye.
walks into the drugstore and says to the pharmacist, I need to buy some cyanide to kill my husband. He says, lady, I can't sell you cyanide to kill your husband. You'll go to jail. I'll go to jail. You're crazy. She reaches into her purse, takes out a picture, and hands it to the pharmacist. It's a picture of her husband in bed with the pharmacist's wife. The pharmacist says, you didn't tell me you had a prescription. Meets a girl in a bar and they go back to her apartment. They go into her bedroom and one wall from floor to ceiling, left to right, the entire wall is full of fluffy toys. Fluffy, fluffy, fluffy toys. Floor to ceiling, side to side, fluffy toys. They get it on. When they get done, he says, how was I? She says, take anything from the bottom shelf.
Jackie Martling, ladies and gentlemen, Jackie Martling. Always funny. Those are his clean ones. Pretty good, pretty good. Before that was Michael Schaefer. Check him out on Facebook. He doesn't have a CD up on CD Baby yet. Always fun. Always fun. And I had a great time performing up in the mountains there. Somewhere in Putnam County. I don't know. I was up there. It was a long drive back. That's all I remember. But it was still fun. It was still fun. Oh, boy, more holidays coming up. I don't know. I don't think March is full of holidays. Is it? No, I don't think so. Hey, this woman I discovered, Katie Goodman, I want to play some of her stuff. She's pretty funny. Might be rated R, but I'm not sure. Let's give it a shot.
There's a word called homophobic.
Homophobic.
But confusion as to how it's used. It doesn't mean gay folks are scary. Like they portray on Fox News. It doesn't mean you should be scared.
Don't be scared.
They're gonna destroy your way of life. And it doesn't mean that if they get married,
married,
it ruins your relationship with your wife. What the phobic part means? At the end of
85% of the non-homophobic men were turned on by gay porn. A whopping 80% of the homophobic men were.
Sorry to be the one to say, if you're homophobic, you're probably gay.
General was rumored to sleep with a male attaché, and a Washington state representative allegedly hired a gigolo for a lay, and a California congressman was accused of giving his boyfriend a fat salary, and an Indiana state representative answered a gay ad for a sugar daddy,
and a Maricopa man was having sex with guys that were underage, and do we even need to mention
Slowtap and Larry Craig?
What do all these guys have in common, you say? Well, they're all politicians whose legislation was
anti-gay. Anti-gay. They say they're anti-gay, but they're really probably gay. You're letting everyone know you're gay.
Here's the moral. If you need to show the world how fiercely you're gay opposed, then you're probably better off just keeping your
homophobic mouth closed. Don't be hating the gays. Why don't you just go ahead and be gay? Some of our best friends are gay.
Katie Goodman, very, very, very funny, funny woman. All righty, let's keep it moving. How about a little, don't forget Movie Attic Headquarters every Tuesday at 4 p.m. It's going to be Catherine Houghton. Catherine Houghton, by the way, is the niece of Catherine Hepburn. Houghton, Hepburn, sounds a lot alike. Anyway, check it out. Here we go with a little Wacky Nancy.
You'll find the hooks of the dress awkward all by yourself. I did everything for Mrs. Reagan. Denny, she'd say, no one dresses me better than you. Yes, it was always Denny. I've kept all of her things. Even the stockings she wore that day for the last time. She'd flung them over the chair in her bedroom when she changed into her shopping clothes. I shall always blame myself for the divorce. It was my fault for being out that evening. You see, I'd gone to the movies and stayed late. It was a double bill. Donovan's Brain and Hellcats of the Navy. Some of her finest work. When I returned about 10:30, I'd heard she'd gone out shopping. I felt worried at once. Neiman Marcus was having a sale. She would have never gone out if I'd been here. She always listened to me. It was midnight, and she had not come back. I went and told Mr. Reagan I was worried. He said, I expect she's spending the night down at the store. I'm sure she'll come up first thing in the morning when the sale's over. I sat on my bed till 5:30. Then I couldn't wait any longer. I got up, put on my coat, and went down to the mall. It was quiet and misty like it is today. The wind had dropped. There wasn't a sound down at the mall. And then I saw it, there on the counter, her credit card. Alongside it a light flashing, credit denied. One of her invoices came in the afternoon mail, along with a note, credit denied. The divorce papers came in with the evening news. Nancy leaves Ron. Credit denied. You wouldn't think she'd been gone for so long now, would you? Not with the way I keep the room, just as she had had them kept. You would think she'd just gone out for a little while and would be back in the evening. I feel her everywhere, don't you? Sometimes in the corridors I fancy I hear her just behind me, that quick, light footstep, I could not mistake it anywhere. And in the gallery there, I fancied I've seen her leaning over it and calling to Mr. Reagan like she used to. Here, boy. Here, boy. Do you think she can see us now? Do you think the divorced come back and watch the living? Sometimes I wonder if she comes back here to the ranch and watches you and Mr. Reagan together. Imelda. Will there be anything else, Mrs. Walker? I'm going now. I know where everything is. Don't touch a thing, a thing, a thing.
Katie Goodman again. New discovery. I find some of these people on Facebook, it's really kind of fun. Oh, lascivious biddies. I don't know. I'm going in a music thing. I don't know what has or winding down the last 7 minutes. Gail Pranto's in the house. Yo, Gail. How's the group Boston doing? Checking it out. Betty Jo Tucker, Movie Attic Headquarters, every Tuesday at 4 p.m. This week, she's going to have Catherine Houghton. Guess who's coming to dinner? Want to check that out? Love that Sydney Poitier. Anyway, we'll keep it going. And the Mom Pop Shop, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 4 p.m. on Dream Stream Radio. You can check them out on Facebook. You can also follow Betty Jo Tucker and Movie Attic Headquarters. So when you press that little button, press follow, and you'll be notified when her shows are coming on. And then you don't even have to figure it out. Right? Right. Okay, we'll keep it going here. I'm not sure. How about a little Housewives on Prozac? Yep, works for me. Hug and a kiss goes out to my friend Gail. Send you a virtual hug, Gail. Betty Jo Tucker, movie etiquette quarter. Tomorrow she'll be having Catherine Holton. Yeah! And the Mom and Pop Shop, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 4 p.m. Check them out. I love this song. Isn't that great? I'll tell you something bizarre. From my window, I'm looking out the window, I can see the East River, and this is how cold it is, people. There's a giant ice floe going by. That's salt water, so you know that's cold. Thank you for tuning in to Movie Addict Headquarters. Remember, you can get my CDs on CD Baby, baby. Check them out. I've got three of them. Oh, go, clarinet, go. We'll just play out here. Thank you for tuning in. And keep smiling. Bye-bye.